Good evening, everybody. We haven't done this in a month, I think. It was the last time we had a Holy Lands lesson, and so we're going to do another one tonight. As we've done in a few times in this series, Charlie's going to help me out tonight with reading some scriptures. The last couple times I've done it, I tried to cover too much ground and just couldn't, it would have taken it. Usually I go 15 minutes over, that would make it go 30 minutes over. But tonight, I think we can incorporate the scripture readings in there to bring a little more meaning to what we're looking at. As a way of just very high-level review, we started off at the coast, at Caesarea Maritima, just north of Hatteras, and have been working our way clockwise around Palestine, going up into Galilee, coming down the Jordan River Valley into the Judean wilderness, Dead Sea area down to Beersheba, and then have come back up, and we looked at a couple of areas in the West Bank, Herodium, and then the last time we met, we began to talk about the old city of Jerusalem. And so tonight we are, well, if we, however many lessons we have left, they're all going to be in Jerusalem. And as a reminder, even though it's called the Old City of Jerusalem, old is relative. The Old City of Jerusalem as a whole is not the city of the time of Jesus. The walls that are around the Old City were built in the 16th century AD. So as I told my girls when we were walking around those walls, they're not biblically old, but they're older than America. And so old is relative. But it's not the city, largely it's not the city of the Bible. It's not the city of the New Testament. But that doesn't mean that there are not things within and under, mostly under, the present day old city of Jerusalem that tie us back to Scripture. So that's what we're going to be looking at tonight. The first thing I want to talk about, probably the most prominent thing that people visit when they go to the Old City of Jerusalem, and it is known as the Western Wall or the Wailing Wall. I have more questions that people ask me about this site than anywhere else in all of Israel, because it's a place that, if something is said about Jerusalem in national news, oftentimes the Western Wall is brought into it. It is also kind of the epicenter of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, and we'll talk more about that in just a minute. But it also has biblical significance. Not, in my view, not the same way in which the Jews of present day look at it, but it is significant in that it ties back to the time of Jesus, okay? So let's start off. What is the Wailing Wall? Well, last week we looked at, or last time, which is a month ago, we looked at a model of the old city of Jerusalem. And we'll have some more pictures of that tonight. But in that, we talked about the temple in the city of Jerusalem in the time of Jesus. There was a great temple mount that was built by Herod the Great, and the temple sat on top of that temple mount. All of that was built by Herod the Great, okay? The Western Wall, the Wailing Wall, is a remnant of the Western Retaining Wall of the Temple Mount that was built by Herod the Great. Okay, now, for the Jews, present-day Jews, this wall is a reminder to them that in their eyes they do not have a Messiah. Remember, largely the Jews rejected Jesus as the Messiah. And also largely, the current modern-day Jews believe that in order for the Messiah to return, the temple has to be rebuilt where it was. We'll talk more about that in just a minute, up on top of the present-day Temple Mount, okay? There's an obstacle on top of the mount. We'll leave that for just a few minutes. We'll talk about the reason why they can't just rebuild the temple up on top of the Temple Mount. By the way, there are groups of Jews that already have the plans for how they would do it if given the opportunity. So that is something that if they decide to take matters in their own hands and clear off the Temple Mount, there are groups that already know what they want to do to rebuild the temple. That's another story for another day. But the Jews come to the wall. Thousands of them on a daily basis come to this wall to pray. And some to wail. And what they're wailing over is that they don't have a Messiah and they don't have a temple. There are some non-Orthodox Jews that will say, hey, we don't wail anymore because we were really wailing that the Arabs had control of the wall, and now we don't wail anymore because the Jews have control of the wall. But others who would say, no, we wail because we don't have a Messiah. But anyway, thousands come every day to pray, okay? And this is from my last trip. This is in June of 22, earlier this summer. The four of us standing in front of what is known as the Western Wall or the Wailing Wall, which you can see right behind us. And before we go any further, though, I want to kind of give you context of what you're looking at. It's just a wall. It's a stone wall, right? And what is that? So let's go back to the model of Jerusalem that we looked at in our last lesson, okay? This in the model, which one thing I want to point out is this model is heavily based upon the writings of Josephus. Josephus, who was a Jewish historian who wrote the Romans, and much of what is depicted in the model of Jerusalem comes from the writings of Josephus, who described the city of Jerusalem in the Second Temple period, which is what this is, in great detail. Okay, and so largely this is based on his description. This is the Temple Mount. This is looking at the city of Jerusalem toward the east. I'm sorry, I said that opposite. Toward the west, we're looking west. This would be like we were standing on the east side of Jerusalem looking west over the valley of the brook Kidron onto the Temple Mount, like we were standing on the Mount of Olives. Okay? So this is the Temple Mount. On that is the temple. We talked about this last time. You have around the temple, you have the court of the Gentiles. In front of the temple here, you have the court of the women, which is also where the treasury would have been. We talked about the widow giving her mite this morning. That would have been in the treasury, which would have been in the court of women. In the front, the wall that's around the court of the women, there is a gate in front of that wall. That's the gate beautiful, where the lame man was begging in Acts chapter 3. On the left-hand side where you have this red roof, that's the royal portico, and there is a portico under this side, which you can't see in this picture, which is Solomon's portico, which is one of the places we know where the apostles taught in the book of Acts. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this and just flip it around, okay? So now we're going to flip to the back side, okay? So now we are looking at the western side, okay? The western side of the Temple Mount. All right, so now this is the western side to the corner here, and you probably can't see this, but where the laser is right here, there's a little arrow right here in this model. It's showing you this section right here, not to the corner, but right here is what they call the Western Wall or the Wailing Wall. The Wailing Wall is a remnant of the Temple Mount, okay? Now, we're going to talk about this more in just a minute, but a little further down from the Wailing Wall, down near the corner where you move from the western side to the southern side, you see this little archway right here? This is known as Robinson's Arch. Now, we're going to talk more about that in just a minute too, because that is a very key thing for how, when they were excavating this back in the early 1800s, how they knew what they had found. Okay? So, we'll talk more about that in just a minute, but the Western Wall is this section right here, okay? So, back to the wall. So now this is a little closer view of the Wailing Wall or the Western Wall. And one thing you'll notice is there's a lot of people here. Now, on this picture, was in June of 22. This was the day before Pentecost. We actually scheduled our itinerary around that so that we would not be inside the city of Jerusalem on Pentecost, because as many people as you would see here on the day before, on the day of Pentecost, you would not have been able to get anywhere close to. Okay, but these are Jews. Many of these are Hasidic Jews, and you can identify a Hasidic Jew for a number of things. One is They will frequently have their sideburns grown out into curls. They'll be wearing a head covering, either a hat or a yarmulke. They will have a phylactery on their forehead that wraps down their left arm, the leather strap that wraps down their left arm. They will have tassels on their robes, on the fringes on the robes and tassels around their neck. And so you see the gentlemen here that are in the black robes with the hats, those are the Hasidic Jews. But there's Jews of all different backgrounds that are down at this wall to pray, okay? And one of the things that happens, you know how we've talked a lot about in different places how in Bible times or in the times of the New Testament, they had these mikvah everywhere, these ritual baths where they had to go through the ritualistic cleansing. Well, ritualistic cleansing is much more scaled back in modern Judaism. You don't have to fully submerge yourself to go to the temple wall. You have to simply pour water into a pitcher and pour it over your hands to be able to go down to the wall. And so there are these little purification fountains that are all over outside the wall. And you will see, again, these are Hasidic Jews. You notice even the young boy's got the long sideburns. And he's got the fringes coming from his shirt. But he is washing his hands to be able to go down to the wall and pray. Men and women are not allowed to go down to the wall together. They have a separate area for each. The men must have their head covered. Even if you're an American, a Christian, you go there. If you do not have a head covering, they will give you one. They will give you something to put on your head. The women do not have to put anything on their head. But you see all kinds. Now, I took this kind of clandestinely. One, I didn't want this guy to shoot me because this is a young man who's got his phylactery. This morning in the Holy Spirit class, Jeff talked about Deuteronomy 6, which is the Shema, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. The phylacteries, they have, you know, it comes from the Old Testament, to have the Word of God between your eyes. They take that literally and put a pouch on their forehead with the Shema in that pouch. And the leather strap from the phylactery wraps all the way down their left arm. But I thought the mixture of him, I watched him put his phylactery on before he went to the wall. But he's also got a machine gun in his right arm. And so it's just an interesting mixture of individuals that are at the wall. Now, seeing a machine gun in Israel is not an uncommon thing. I mean, that's, we tell people up front, like, you're going to see machine guns every day. But just the mixture of, you know, phylactery and machine gun, and also with the plaid shirt and the jeans, you know, it's just an interesting mixture of kind of culture there. But these are the Hasidic Jews with their prayer shawls and their long sideburns, their long coats, and they are praying at the wall. Now, if you zoom in, actually, let me back up a second. Before we talk about what they do at the wall, I want to point something out. So, the Western Wall, the Wailing Wall, we talk about that being a remnant of the Temple Mount. Well, you look at it today, you go, well, there is a complete Temple Mount today. Why do we single out this one section? Is that this goes back to the time of Jesus? Well, the Temple Mount has, you know, it endured, at least the bottom part of this that still exists, endured the destruction of the temple in AD 70. And has endured war after war after war, and has been rebuilt over time. It has been rebuilt by the Byzantines, rebuilt by the Muslims, rebuilt by the Crusaders, by the Romans, on and on and on. And so when you look at anything around the Temple Mount, one way you can know whether or not it goes back to the time of Herod the Great is by looking at the stones themselves. A stone that was put there by Herod the Great will generally have this characteristic. One, it will be very large, and I've got something I'll show you the scale of this in a minute. But also the stone, you notice how on the outside of this stone there is a depression that creates kind of a frame around the stone. That is the architecture of Herod the Great. Okay, so when you're looking at if you're looking at the Western Wall, and we'll go back here. As you get near the top, you see how there's these little bitty stones up at the top? Those were put there by Romans, Crusaders, Muslims, and so on. As you get down near the bottom, these are much larger stones that have those frames around them, and you can tell which stones go all the way back to the first century and which do not. So, again, this is just a close-up showing what these stones look like. Now, if you get up close, notice how it's harder to see in this picture, but all of these stones have got these frames around them, okay? But what do you see in the cracks between the stones? Little pieces of paper, right? I mean, there's thousands and thousands of pieces of paper crammed into every crack and crevice in this wall. And this is the Jews are writing down prayers and stuffing them in the cracks. And every so often, there is a head rabbi over the Wailing Wall, will come through and clear out all the scraps of paper and will burn them. And then they keep getting refilled, and every day they're getting refilled, and it's more prayers. But you'll watch them as they're praying at the wall, placing their hand on the wall, and putting paper with prayers written on them in the cracks. And again, you see here these Hasidic Jewish men praying, and how these cracks are just completely stuffed with scraps of paper all over the wall. Now, as I said earlier, my view of this wall is very different than the view of a modern Jew. Okay? My view of the wall is it is a neat archaeological find, site, because it ties back to the time of Jesus. I mean, those, especially where those large stones are, those go all the way back to the first century. So when Jesus was walking around the Temple Mount, those were the stones he was seeing. I'm seeing the same stones he was. Okay? To the Jews, it's a very different view. Because what they're seeing is that they don't have a Messiah, and they don't have a temple. Now, they really would like to rebuild the temple up on top of the mount as it exists today. But the reason why they cannot is because up on top of the mount, there are two Islamic sites that really make up one site, if you will. The first of those is the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Now, this was taken from the Mount of Olives. I'm back outside the city just so you could see it. But up on top of the Temple Mount is the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Now, this mosque was built, originally built beginning in the 8th century, and has been destroyed and rebuilt and destroyed and rebuilt. But the Al-Aqsa Mosque is up there. And just a different view. Here's a view of it from the ground level up near the wall. And you can see the dome up on top of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. And then just down from that is up on the Temple Mount, the Dome of the Rock. Dome of the Rock was built between 691 and 692 AD. And it is the place where, according to the Quran, where the Prophet Muhammad ascended into heaven. It is built on top of what is called the Foundation Stone, which is supposedly the stone upon which Abraham sacrificed Ishmael, not Isaac, according to the Quran, the Muslims trace their lineage through Ishmael. Isaac was to be sacrificed on Mount Moriah. Solomon built the temple on Mount Moriah. This is Mount Moriah. Unless there is a strange thing happening with the names, this is the same place. But they say, well, this is the stone, and upon that stone they built the Dome of the Rock. Now, the Dome of the Rock and the Al-Aqsa Mosque are referred to as the Al-Aqsa Compound. And the Al-Aqsa compound is the third most holy site in Islam. So you've got Mecca, the big black rock in Mecca is number one. Medina is number two. This is number three. So if the Jews took it upon their own hands to clear off the Temple Mount, what would happen? World War III would happen. Okay. So this again is a reminder to them that we cannot rebuild our temple. At least right now, we cannot have our Messiah. But it's also, you know, even into Jewish culture today, when the Jews today celebrate the Passover, they don't have a temple where they can go sacrifice a lamb, so they replace it with a shank bone on their plate because they can't have lambs prepared in the temple. When they finish the Passover meal, which they call a Seder today, they will say next year. In Jerusalem, as if, by next year the temple will be rebuilt and we will celebrate the Passover in Jerusalem, okay? It infiltrates every part of Jewish culture, at least Orthodox Judaism. Okay, does that all make sense? But to the Christian, I don't look at this as an unfulfilled promise of God. I look at this as, this is archaeology that goes back to the time of Jesus. There's a very big difference, okay? I think it's a neat place, but I definitely don't look at it the same way that Jews do. Okay. Now, I'm going to go back to the model for just a second. And Charlie, get ready for that first reading. It'll be just a minute. So back to the model. So I said that the Wailing Wall, the Western Wall, is right here. And I pointed out Robinson's Arch right here. Now, in the early 1800s, all of this was underground. Okay? So the dirt was all the way up to this level, above this area. It was up here. And as they began to excavate, they uncovered this, and there was a biblical scholar named Robinson, who, using the writings of Josephus, looked at what he found, which is this. This is what it looks like today. Same spot, same corner. This is the Wailing Wall is up here. This is down in the corner. But you see this little piece that's sticking out of the wall right there? Can you see that right there? See where my little pointer is going around in a circle? There's a little thing sticking out just right there. All right, you guys have already forgotten. This means yes, this means no. You see that? Okay. When they were excavating this, he identified this from the writings of Josephus and said that's the arch that Josephus was describing coming from the Temple Mount. That's why it's called Robinson's Arch. So he was the one that identified as this being the western side of the Temple Mount. And as you get closer, I put this in here. As you get closer, now you see how large this is one of the original stones. You see how large the stones are? I mean, they are big, okay? Took this to give you a perspective of how large they are. But as you get closer to this, you see that broken archway where it was sticking out of the Temple Mount. Again, Robinson's Arch. And very important, not that it's biblically important, other than this individual, this biblical scholar, Robinson, said, hey, that's what Josephus was describing. This is the Temple Mount. So pretty cool thing. Now, get ready, Charlie. This, when they were uncovering it, they found all over this western side of the Temple Mount big piles of rocks. And what they figured out was, this is the remains of what was on top. Charlie, read to us from Matthew 24.
Matthew 24, 1 and 2. Jesus left the temple and was going away, and his disciples came to point out to him the buildings of the temple. But he answered them, "You see all these, do you not? Truly I say to you, there will not be left here one stone upon another that will not be thrown down."
So these are the thrown down stones from up on top. Now there is no temple up on top anymore. I mean, Jesus said it was going to happen, and the temple was completely obliterated by the Romans. And some of these rocks even still bear the scorch marks of where the city was burned. So again, you see this and go, this is exactly what Jesus said would happen, and it happened. So pretty neat thing there. Now, I'm not going very far, okay? Not going very far, but I'm going to move around the corner from the western side to the southern side and talk about something that today is called the Southern Steps, okay? Now, the Southern Steps are important to me. This is one of my favorite places to visit in Israel, because this is one of those places where you're like, we know Jesus walked on these rocks, okay? Jesus went to the temple a lot. Even though he wasn't in Jerusalem a lot, it's recorded in Scripture numerous times. And I've got a list here, you know, from the four Gospels, all the times he was in the temple. Charlie, read to us from Matthew 21.
Matthew 21, 12 and 13. And Jesus entered the temple and drove out all those who sold and bought the temple. And he overturned the tables of the money changers and the seats of those who sold pigeons. And he said to them, "It is written, my house shall be a house of prayer, but you make it a den of robbers."
Now, in order for Jesus to get to where the money changers were, he had to get to the court of women. That's where the treasury was. In order to get up on top of the Temple Mount, to the top of the Temple Mount, which is where the court of the women was, where the treasury was, you had to go in through the Southern Steps. Okay, that's how you access the Temple Mount, was by going in through the Southern Steps. And so you would go through here, you would climb these steps, and then in here you would climb steps and come out in the court of the Gentiles. All right? Today, these are those steps. They are still there. So again, this is one of those places you're like, Jesus walked on these steps. And they're still there. Now, you notice what's right up on top. That's the Al-Aqsa Mosque, right up on top of that. But down below, at some point, you can, when you're up there, you can tell where the original steps end and the kind of where over the centuries they've filled in the gaps where that happened. But all these down here at the bottom, these are all original steps back to the first century, back to Herod the Great. And another possibility, okay, now this goes from I'm almost completely certain that Jesus walked on those steps to perhaps this happened. You hear the difference? Perhaps this happened. When Peter and the other apostles preached on the day of Pentecost. Now, Pentecost, remember, was a pilgrimage festival required at a minimum Jewish males had to go to Jerusalem. So it was in Jerusalem, okay? And Peter and the other apostles preached to the crowd, and they were convicted, and they were baptized. And how many were baptized? 3,000, right? 3,000. Now, there's no big, huge body of water near Jerusalem. So where were 3,000 baptized? There was no big body of water, but there are mikvah. Remember, we've talked about mikvah before, these ritual baths. The ritual baths for the temple were at the bottom of the steps. Because in order to enter the temple, you had to bathe yourself. Okay? And to this point, I believe I have this number right. They have uncovered, this is 2,000 years later, at least 47 of these. Okay? But you have to believe there were many, many more. So I said all that to say, maybe this is where the apostles were when they preached the sermon. This is up on top of a hill. Going down from here is straight downhill. It would have been like a natural kind of amphitheater. And right below them is all these mikvah. Where they could have done all the baptisms. I don't know. I don't know where it happened. But this is one possibility. Now, this is one of my favorite. I selfishly put this on there. It's one of my favorite pictures from Israel from this last trip, because we got a picture of all four of us sitting on the southern steps. And so I just really, really, I've got that picture on my mantle. I just love that we were all there together and sitting on the southern steps. Now, just down from the southern steps, this is the field of mikvah that they've uncovered. So this right here, it's a mikvah. Everywhere where you see a little hole in the ground, that's a mikvah. And you get closer, what does it look like? It looks like a baptistry, right? I mean, because that's what a mikvah looked like. And so, you know, it's hard to tell from the picture, but again, all of this, it's just full of mikvah. And so perhaps this is where the 3,000 were baptized on the day of Pentecost. Because again, they were in Jerusalem. And so perhaps this is where they were baptized. Okay. All right. Now, we're going to move down a little further to the south from the Temple Mount into an area that today is called the City of David, but also way before the time of Jesus was called the City of David. Okay. Today, the City of David is kind of like an archaeological park. Imagine a zoo, but with archaeology instead of animals, okay? But what have I been saying about the old city of Jerusalem? It's not the city of Jesus, other than the temple, which, again, even as late as the early 1800s, much of that was underground, had to be dug out. But almost everything that has been found in Jerusalem that dates back to the time of the Bible is not in Jerusalem, it's under Jerusalem, okay? And so this archaeological park, you start off at ground level and then you start going down where they have dug down into the ancient city, okay? And I mentioned it sits on the eastern side of the old city. It's on the eastern side of the old city. It's south of the Temple Mount. It's actually outside of the present-day walls, but it would have been inside the walls in Jesus' time. Now, the area where this park is located, the reason why it's called the City of David is because this is the area where what would have been known of as Jerusalem when David took the city from the Jebusites, and actually it was renamed as the City of David. It was called the City of David. And in just a minute, Charlie's going to read to us from 2 Samuel, and where David took the city from the Jebusites. In Bible Bowl, maybe you remember talking about that Jerusalem was still under the control of the Jebusites in the time of Joshua. Well, by 2 Samuel, David conquers Jerusalem. And we'll talk about how he got into the city in just a minute. But we'll skip over this last part because we're going to get to all there. Now, we're back to our model, okay? So in this model, now we're back looking west. We're on the eastern side of the city looking west. There's the southern steps that you can't really see there. But down from there, you have this area where you have an outer wall and then an inner wall right here. This rough outline here is what the footprint of the city of Jerusalem would have been during the time of David. When David took it from the Jebusites, established it as the capital of Israel, that's what Jerusalem, the size of Jerusalem would have been. And remember, later his son Solomon built the temple up here, okay? But this would have been the city of Jerusalem in the time of David. Looking at it from a different direction, this is looking at it, looking north at the southern end of the temple. This is the city of David down here between these two walls. And I also want to point out this pool here, that this is the pool of Siloam, which doesn't tie to the time of David. Almost to the time of David. Goes back to the time of Hezekiah. But this is the city of David. Here's the pool of Siloam. And in just a minute, we're going to talk about the pool of Siloam and this road right here, which is known as the Pilgrimage Road. Okay, here's the southern steps. You can see them up here at the top. Here's the city of David, pool of Siloam, Pilgrimage Road. Okay, now, had to throw in a cat picture. Yes, there's cats even in Jerusalem. All right, now, imagine that you're at street level at this archaeological park, and the first thing you do is you go down like three flights of stairs, okay? And you'll notice that we're kind of under something because you see these little slats of light here that are coming through the ceiling, which would have been what I was just standing on before. Now I'm down underground. And this is a very large building that dates back to the time of David. Now some have speculated maybe this was David's palace when he made this the capital and he established his kingdom there. We have no idea what this building was. There's no inscription that ties back to David. There was, however, found a bulla, which is a signet ring, from much later than the time of David. David would have been 10th, 11th century BC. Much later than the time of David, from the time of Zedekiah, who was the last king of Judah, a bulla of a servant of Zedekiah. So there is an assumption that this was some type of an administrative building. But this is, again, this is, a building that would have been present in Jerusalem, in the area, where Jerusalem would have been when David conquered it. Another section of that same building, again, you see the rocks there. But all of this is underground. I mean, they've hollowed this out and it's all underground. Now, I'm going to keep going down. Okay, now underneath that, and we're back outside, because this one they've actually come in from the side, down and from the side. This is a retaining wall. You remember that building we were just looking at? It was kind of in the shade underground. Well, this is the retaining wall that was holding up that building. Okay, so all of this is under what I was just showing you. So again, you keep going down. Okay, this was, a big retaining wall going down from there. Now we're really going to go down, okay? And this is, I couldn't believe I got Olivia to go in here. She is so claustrophobic. By the time she got it, she was, openly weeping by the time we got out of here. Bless her heart. But this is the only way to get to the Pool of Siloam is to go through this. And she was determined she was going to get there. This is descending into what is the remains of an ancient Canaanite water system. Now, So about Canaanite, we're talking about pre-Israelite. Okay? Who controlled the land of Palestine before Israel conquered it? Different groups of Canaanites, you know, whether it's the Philistines or the Jebusites or the, you know, this is from the Canaanite period. So this is, you know, this is older than the Israelite period. This is pre Joshua leading the children of Israel into the promised land. But they had a water system. You know, we've looked at water systems in other cities. There was a water system in Jerusalem, okay? Now, this is significant. This is significant in the because of the way in which David entered the city of Jerusalem to take it from the Jebusites. And Charlie's going to read that in just a minute. I think I just had the 2 Samuel passage, not the Chronicles passage. Okay. So this is us descending down into the Canaanite water system. Now, this right here is just looking down into a shaft. And this is referred to as Warren's Shaft because there was an archaeologist named Warren who, before archaeologists had figured out this very intricate Canaanite water system, had climbed up this shaft and then from that supposed that this was the way in which David got into the city of Jerusalem to infiltrate the city and take it from the Jebusites. Okay, Charlie, read that passage from 2 Samuel.
2 Samuel chapter 5, verses 6 through 10. And the king and his men went to Jerusalem against the Jebusites, the inhabitants of the land, who said to David, "You will not come in here, but the blind and the lame will ward you off," thinking, "David cannot come in here." Nevertheless, David took the stronghold of Zion, that is, the city of David. And David said on that day, "Whoever would strike the Jebusites, let him get up the water shaft to attack the lame and the blind, who are hated by David's soul. Therefore it is said, the blind and the lame shall not come into the house." And David lived in the stronghold and called it the city of David. And David built the city all around from the Millo inward. And David became greater and greater, for the Lord, the God of hosts, was with him.
Now, did you catch how David told them to get into the city? Through the water shaft. Warren, the archaeologist Warren, thought this was it. Now, modern archaeology has disproved that because we now understand how the Canaanite water system worked. But David's men got into the city of Jerusalem through this water system that we're about to visually walk through. Okay, and so one element of this, and again, this is hard to show in pictures. I think Sarah would agree this is way cooler in person than it is in picture. I mean, we are continuing to go down, I mean, multiple flights of steps in every picture I'm showing you into this, what feels like a big cave. But one of the elements of this right here is a water reservoir, okay, from the Canaanite period, okay? And this reservoir, it's lit up in blue because there's no light in here other than the blue light. I mean, this is just dark other than the blue light. But this reservoir was filled by the Gihon Spring. Now, the Gihon Spring is important in Scripture. It, among other things, that's where Solomon was anointed king. 1 Kings chapter 1, you go read that. Solomon was anointed at the Gihon Spring. The water system of the Canaanites tapped into the Gihon Spring and filled this reservoir. And right next to this reservoir is a tower. A tower that was built. So the reservoir is right down here. You see where this gentleman's standing right here? You can see how it's kind of blue back there? That's where the reservoir is. And this is a tower erected beside that to protect it. Your water source is incredibly important. So they had a tower beside it to protect it. Okay. Now, continuing to go down, we get to this spot. Okay, be ready for the next one, Charlie. We get to this spot. Now, this is the entrance to what is known as Hezekiah's tunnel. Hezekiah was a later king, and Hezekiah, who was facing threat from the Assyrians, needed to divert the water supply so they could access it from inside the city. So, he dug a tunnel to connect to the Gihon Spring with the Pool of Siloam, okay? We just talked about the Pool of Siloam. We talked about the Gihon Spring. He dug a tunnel to connect the two. Charlie, read those next two passages I've got on there.
2 Kings chapter 20, verse 20. The rest of the deeds of Hezekiah and all his might, and how he made the pool and the conduit and brought water into the city, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the kings of Judah? And then 2 Chronicles chapter 32, verse 30. This same Hezekiah closed the upper outlet of the waters of Gihon and directed them down to the west side of the city of David. And Hezekiah prospered in all his works.
So this is a very brief description of Hezekiah diverting the water of the Gihon spring to the Pool of Siloam, okay, so that they could access the water from inside the city. And this is a relatively recent discovery, but this is that tunnel. Well, how do we know that? Because his inscription is at the mouth of this tunnel. And a description of how they did it. I mean, it's one of those incredible finds, and then you're like, well, I wonder what this thing is. Oh, wow, here's a description on the wall of what this is. Now, I have never been able to go down this. I so badly want to go through this. You can go through it, but it's like wasting water the whole way through. But I really want to do it sometime. But I took a picture of the girl standing right at the mouth of it. And going just a little bit further, there's a little metal catwalk. I had to use a flash because there is no light in here whatsoever. And this is the little gate going into Hezekiah's tunnel. And underneath this bridge, this little catwalk here, this is the Gihon Spring. So again, when you're reading about in 1 Kings 1 about Solomon being anointed at the Gihon Spring, this is the spring right here that runs out to this day, out to the Pool of Siloam. It doesn't fill up the Pool of Siloam because it's mostly not there. But this is where it's running. And then I've got a picture without the light where you can see see the water, the little blue light down here. You can see the water underneath this catwalk. That is the Gihon Spring. Now, if you don't go out through the Hezekiah's tunnel, which in order to go through Hezekiah's tunnel, you've got to come prepared to get wet. And so if you're not prepared to get wet, you have to go out another direction. And the other direction is the Canaanite, tunnel that was part of the Canaanite water system. Again, the water system that had the big reservoir, that had the tower. And this is like being at, Chattanooga, Rock City. It's like being in Rock City, going through here. Just took a picture of the girls through there. Libby was not a fan of this little part at all. But we got through it. And then once you get through it, you are essentially at the Pool of Siloam. Now, remember how I showed you coming from the top to the bottom of the city of David and the Pool of Siloam? Do I have that? Nope, I don't. But city of David and the Pool of Siloam was just to the west side of the city of David. Well, this, you come out through the Canaanite water system and you are right at the Pool of Siloam. Now, the Pool of Siloam, here you can see the edges of that. They filled it in with some wood so to make a complete platform, but you can see the original stones here. The pool was steps going down on all four sides down into the pool. And what remains is one corner of the pool, which you can see a corner here with the original stones, and then they've been supplemented here with some wooden steps here. And we also got a picture of the family on the steps, and I was able to, our whole group sat on the steps while I talked to them, and I talked to them about what I'm about to tell you, which is the Pool of Siloam, besides being the place where Hezekiah rerouted the Gihon Spring to fill the Pool of Siloam, is most known for the miracle of Jesus in John 9. Charlie, read that to us real quick. This is John chapter 9.
John 9:1-7. As he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. And his disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" Jesus answered, "It was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world." Having said these things, he spit on the ground and made mud with the saliva. Then he anointed the man's eyes with mud and said to him, "Go wash in the Pool of Siloam," which means sent. So he went and washed and came back seeing.
So, thank you, Charlie. So this is the pool where Jesus told the man to wash his eyes. Now, When this was originally discovered, which has, I think, been about 20 years ago, it was a question mark. Is this the Pool of Siloam or is it not? That has now been confirmed because of what I'm going to talk about next. The next thing I'm going to talk about is just to the north of that. It has only been uncovered in the last 3 years. And this is known of as the Pilgrimage Road. Okay, that's a modern name. That's not a name that you find in Scripture. But Pilgrimage Road was a road that connected the Pool of Siloam with the Temple Mount, up to the southern steps. And the purpose of that, among other things, it was a commercial road. Now, don't think of road in the way we think of road. I mean, this actually had steps in it, but there were vendors on either side of the street, you know, selling their things. But one purpose of this road, and the reason why it connected the Pool of Siloam was the temple, was that during the Feast of Booths, the Feast of Tabernacles, which was a seven-day feast, every day the priest would take the pitcher, the golden pitcher from the temple, come down the Pilgrimage Road to fill the pitcher from the Pool of Siloam, would walk back to the temple and pour the pitcher over the altar. Okay, and while that was happening, it was referred to as the Festival of Water, and people would line the street and they would lay down branches, almost like Jesus with the triumphal entry. They would lay down branches in front of the priest as he was walking through. And we know in John chapter 7 that Jesus was there during the Feast of Booths. And, you know, maybe it was him seeing this water festival that they had during the Feast of Booths that caused him to say this. Read from John chapter 7.
John chapter 7, verses 37 through 39. On the last day of the feast, the great day, Jesus stood up and cried out, "If anyone thirsts, let him come to me and drink. Whoever believes in me, as the scripture has said, out of his heart will flow rivers of living water." Now this he said about the Spirit, whom those who believed in him were to receive. For as yet the Spirit had not been given, because Jesus was not yet glorified.
And so this is another one of those perhaps Jesus being there in the Feast of Booths and watching this ceremony happening every day, saying, you know, let me talk to you about, it's almost like with the Samaritan woman, like he's making a point about living water with using the object lesson of the physical water. Maybe he was doing the same thing there, we don't know. But this road, finding this road in the last 3 years, now you look at it and say, well, that looks like a tunnel. Well, why? How'd they find it? They had to go down. And they had to, as they went down, fortify the sides to keep this from collapsing, because up on top, there's buildings, houses up on top. Okay, so this really is like a tunnel. But this would have been a road at surface level during the time of Jesus. Okay, but then finding this road virtually assures us that the Pool of Siloam is the Pool of Siloam. Okay, because this was what connected it. And so, this is a really, really neat thing to be able to walk up through this. Here again, it's a tunnel, you know, and it's a, but you can walk it almost all the way up to the southern steps. And again, every step that you're walking, there's something built up on top of it. So they had to, again, they're like excavating and not destroying, and at the same time boring a tunnel through underneath the old city of Jerusalem. So it's pretty crazy, the engineering feat here. I'm sure Mike could tell me more about how impressive this is than I even know. But this, again, back to the model. Here's the city of David. As I was talking about, we're going down, down, down. This is the path that we were following. And we come out of the Canaanite water system, and where are we? We're right here at the Pool of Siloam. Now, we know from modern archaeology, the Pool of Siloam should have been stair-stepped on the sides. This model was not. But there's the Pool of Siloam, there's the Pilgrimage Road that goes all the way up to the southern steps, and that's the road that has been uncovered. And so again, it's kind of cool. This was one of my absolute favorite things to see the first time I went. It was really neat to be able to take my girls back to this last time we went, and they got to walk up part of the way up this road, and then we'll finish with that. Now, Jeff led us in a song right before this. We saw the night, I think, the title of the song. And I appreciate him leading that, because just seeing these things is not why we believe, right? Because we didn't, as the song says, we sang, we didn't see Jesus walking on, you know, we didn't see him walking in this road. We didn't see him walking on the steps. We didn't see him with the disciples as they walked, and the disciples were admiring the temple, and Jesus said there's not going to be one stone left. But we didn't see any of that, right? But we believe it. We believe it, and we have seen it with the eyes of faith, not something we've physically seen. And so this is intended to be an enhancement of the faith, the faith vision that we already have, right? Because without faith, you don't believe that this is what we're saying it is anyway, right? I mean, you just think this is just a pile of rocks. It's just a pile of rocks. We're just digging up, we're just digging tunnels in Jerusalem for no reason, right? But it has significance to us because we believe through the eyes of faith that Jesus was here. We believe that David climbed up through that water system to infiltrate Jerusalem and take it from the Jebusites. You know, we believe he began expanding the city that was further expanded by Hezekiah. We believe that Jesus went into the temple and cleared out the money changers. We believe that on Pentecost, the apostles, wherever they were, whether it was at the steps to the Temple Mount or somewhere else, that they preached in the city of Jerusalem and 3,000 responded to the gospel message. And we have the same opportunity to respond to the gospel message. That's still there. But we have to respond with faith, because we haven't seen it. We have to believe it without physically seeing it. And that's what faith is all about. And if you're here tonight and you've never taken those first steps of faith, where we believe because of what God has told us, not because of what we've seen with our physical eyes, but what we believe through the eyes of faith. If you have never taken those first steps of faith, we encourage you to be baptized, to come out of that water ready to live a new life with Jesus. If there's anything else we can do for you, please come while we sing.